Now it's time to get the latest from the quarterback of the pack, Aaron Rodgers. It's Tuesdays with Aaron. Here's your host, Jason Wilde.
It is the Aaron Rodgers Show. Tuesdays with Aaron. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. A sad addition. I thought that once we started this show, you were never going to lose another game. It finally happened. How you doing?
It's your fault.
I picked you to win. That's probably why.
Exactly.
What does, when you go 364 days as a team without losing, you had not walked off the field having lost since the November 28th, 2010 game in Atlanta. What does it feel like when you finally lose again?
Well, that's a bad feeling. You know, I think you... You used to win it, and you go a calendar year without losing. It's a good feeling. It's a lot of positive things come out of that. A lot of history we've been able to be a part of, and some great accomplishments on the field. And then you lose, and I don't think it wipes away those accomplishments. It just kind of gives you that terrible feeling of disappointment, frustration, eagerness to get back on the field, knowing that you know, you lost that game, and there's nothing you can do about it for a week. So. You know, it's a tough feeling, but, you know, just a good reminder that anything can happen on any Sunday, and, you know, play your best game, you can lose.
People who know you better than I do even say that you are as hyper-competitive as anyone they've ever met. So I cringe to ask you this question, but we are different people, and I thought that it might be a blessing in disguise. There might be some good that came out of this loss, and I'll tell you who else thought that before we talk about the game. John Elway said this on his radio show. His quote was, "You get tired of talking about being undefeated. Now they'll be able to get back on track and focused on winning a world championship and not worrying about an undefeated season." Now, that comes from the quarterback of a team that won the Super Bowl, then won his first 13 games in 1998, lost, and then won that Super Bowl. How do you view it? Is that, do you disagree with John and I?
No, I don't want to disagree with John. I disagree with you all day. But John, you know, obviously has been there and dealt with the same kind of questions and expectations and feelings. I think we all wanted a chance to play for history. And, you know, we were making Green Bay history every time we won, adding to our winning streak. But I think we all wanted to take a shot at the undefeated Dolphins and have the potential to play through a whole season, and playoffs included, be undefeated. But, you know, it's frustrating, but, you know, it might take some of that those questions, that pressure off some of the guys. I personally didn't feel it, but, you know, I know it would have kicked up in the playoffs. But our ultimate goal, as we said, and we a lot of us probably said after the game, our goal is to win the Super Bowl. It's, you know, it's not... It's not just to be undefeated.
So do you think the pressure would have ratcheted up? Because I think, I don't want to agree with you on something, but I would think that at some level it seemed like to this point it hadn't been as intense as maybe as I would have expected it. The locker room wasn't full with as many of the national media as I would have expected. You think it would have gotten to be a lot in the playoffs?
It would have gotten more for sure, but... You know, there's been plenty of other stories to cover this year, thankfully. But, you know, we had a good run, won 19 games in a row. I mean, that's quite a feat, and we all enjoyed those moments. And now it's time to start another run, and we did last year, starting with our second last game of the season, and good chance to get back on track this week.
Let's before we talk about the game, I think it is interesting how people's opinions change. You guys go from people talking about you as potentially the greatest football team of all time, to now, did they peak too early? The Saints look like they're playing well. The 49ers look like they're playing well. Just overall, how do you feel about your team right now, and what's your concern level about it?
I feel great about our team. I think we still have the best record in the National Football League. We need to get healthy, that's for sure. But on the horizon are some guys coming back. Which we're looking forward to. I think, you know, you always need to pay attention to how history has played out, because often it repeats itself. And I believe in 2007, maybe it was 2009. It was 2009, wasn't it, when the Saints went 13-0, lost their last three, and won the Super Bowl. We don't plan on losing our last two. However, I can remember the scrutiny that was associated with that team. People said they weren't going to win a playoff game, and they'd peak too early, and there was a recipe to beat them. A lot of stuff that you're hearing about us. Let me tell you this. You know, people. I saw some of the comments. Oh, there's a formula to beating the Packers now, and there's a blueprint. Look, the blueprint to win any games in the NFL: control the time of possession, don't turn the ball over, and be good on third downs, and punt the ball one time. That's kind of what they did. And they stopped us pretty good as well. So that's a blueprint for any team to beat any team in the league. I laugh when it's a blueprint to beat us. A lot of teams have played us exclusively man, and we've won all those games. So it's just a matter of, you know, they didn't turn the ball over. We didn't do a great job on third down. They did a good job on third down. They punted one time and scored on every other possession, and we didn't.
Well, I guess I can cross that question off my list. You have been saying for a while that there was not, you didn't believe there to be a recipe.
No, there's a blueprint to winning in this league, a recipe. Don't turn the ball over. Don't turn the ball over, you got a real good chance of winning.
And that was the first team that didn't turn the ball over since New England against you. And they
there you go.
Were the last team that had beaten you.
You're welcome for that softball.
I appreciate that. What about the idea of getting pressure with your front four against you, though, because you went into the game. I haven't seen the updated stats, but you were leading the NFL in passer rating against the blitz. Now, obviously, you were leading the NFL in passer rating, period. But you've been really good. I think in 2009 you finished second in the league. Last year you were number one. This year you're number one. It would seem to me that if you blitz Aaron Rodgers, that's probably not a great formula, but if you can get pressure with your front four, you at least give yourself a chance.
Again, this is probably the problem with losing your first game, is that people forget this recipe, supposedly, it's been used by all the other teams. Every team, and I've said it just about every week, either on this show or in my Wednesday locker room, every team coming in has had a very significantly higher percentage of pressure that they normally use than the final game statistics. Any team that's coming in at 40%, 35%, 30%, 20%, not pressuring us. And the Chiefs did the exact same thing. They brought five-man pressure occasionally, but they didn't bring six one time. They didn't bring their slide pressure zones. They didn't bring empty pressure. They didn't pressure. That's been the majority of every team has done. So it's nothing new. Every team, you know, from Minnesota, Chicago, Detroit, they've all tried. You know, they've all tried to get pressure with four and play covers. That's been their scheme, and occasionally bring a five-man pressure. Right. For whatever reason, maybe they saw the Saints try some slide pressures, and we hit them a couple times. But for whatever reason, that's been the case. So it's not something new that the Chiefs did. They just did it pretty good. We didn't execute very well. We didn't make the plays that were there, and they held on the football.
Well, before we talk about your execution, let's talk about your offensive line. You mentioned that you guys need to get healthy. You lose Brian Bulaga. Then Derek Sherrod goes in, and he ends up he's still in Kansas City after having to have surgery after breaking his leg.
Right.
What's your concern level on your offensive line right now? Cliffy may practice this week. It was a good thing he had Sitton come back.
Yeah, it was. And Sitton and I were talking about that on the bus we're leaving the stadium. You know, it's one of those things where Brian goes down, and then Derek obviously had the gruesome injury. We need Cliffy back at some point, just from a number standpoint. But the other guys, had to shuffle around a little bit. Evan played left guard, we hadn't played probably in a while. TJ went over to right tackle, which he hadn't played in a while. So it's one of those things. Those guys playing a little out of position. We have to see who's healthy this week and see what kind of changes we need to make. In order to make sure those guys feel comfortable and we're getting the kind of time and protection we need to be successful.
Well, I don't know how many of your friends or relatives have asked you about this, but my Twitter mentions column was full. The Tauscher Nation is out in full effect. Have you talked at all to your good friend Tausch? Do you know if he is? His dad said he's not officially retired. Is he retired? Do you think there's any chance the team would call him out of retirement here?
Well, I think it's it's an interesting proposition. I don't believe it's going to happen just based on kind of the precedent that's been set here in bringing back older players. But, you know, it happened before. We brought Tausch back. We brought Amon Green back. I don't know what Tausch's status is. I'm sure with the winter weather, he's not getting a chance to play as much golf or tennis as he would like. He's an avid golfer and tennis player. Believes he's kind of the heavier Rafa Nadal. And obviously a left-handed lumpy for you golf fans. You know, I'm sure he's, you know, him and Max are hanging out, Sarah, and he, you know, he wouldn't mind coming up. I just don't know what our interest would be.
What about and during the course of the game, another one of your favorite guys seemed to be, I don't want to say he was taken out of the game by the officials, but Jordy picked up those two offensive pass interference penalties. I'm not looking to get you fined here, but... what did you think of those penalties, and did you think in any way that impacted either how Jordy played or how often you were able to get him the ball?
Well, I think their defense dictated kind of the way that went because they played so much two-high man. Their game plan, it looked like, was to double Jermichael when they had the chance, especially on third downs, and double Jordy on early downs. So I was surprised by the penalties. Got an explanation that was sufficient. I didn't get a great view on either of them, but the first one, the ref said he put two hands in his lower back and pushed. If that's the case, then it's a penalty. The film, actually, you can't even really tell because the video comes a little late to Jordy, so you can't really tell on the first one whether that was looked like interference or not. The second one, you know, there's not a very good view either. So that's, you know, I was joking with Flowers, saying that he's, you know, he's good enough. He doesn't need a call like that to go his way. But I think the reasons why Jordy wasn't as big a factor was because they really were putting two guys on the whole time. When that happens, you know, we got to get our other guys involved.
Well, the other storyline from a receiving perspective was obviously you had some problems with drops again. You've been very clear about how you feel about physical mistakes versus mental mistakes. But what do you do in situations like that? Do you say anything? Is there anything to be said? I mean, what's kind of the, when things start to spiral a little bit in terms of drops, what do you do as a quarterback?
I think we've talked about this before. I mean, there's really not a whole lot you can say. They're physical mistakes. They're going to happen. You don't want them to. They don't want them to. But they're a part of the game. So I think, you know, with some guys, you kind of got to give them the look, and some guys, you got to pat them on the butt and say, hey, I know you're going to get the next one. But something we want to clean up, something we talk about a lot, and I'm not really worried about that. I'm not worried about the drops. They're going to happen, but hopefully we can clean those up a little bit better. And you know, the most frustrating ones are, you know, a third down conversion or a drop that turns into a pick. And thankfully we didn't have the second kind, but we had a couple potential first down conversions. We just got to hold on, got to put the ball on the spot where, you know, we're not going to drop it.
Jermichael had some problems with that in New York. He was actually talking to his hands at one point, I think, during the game on Sunday. Do you in any way have to fight the urge not to go back to a guy when he's had a couple of drops? Because obviously you continue to go to him. He had a couple of big gains, big catches later in the game.
Yeah, I mean, you got to keep feeding that guy. I mean, he's so talented. He has so much athletic ability. You know, whether he drops one pass or two passes, you got to keep going to him. He's a valuable asset to our team, and at some point, you know, he's going to get going and make a big time play that could change the game. So he's gonna have to get those targets, and we got to do a better job of making sure when he gets 10 targets that he's catching seven for 120. And we both can do. You know, I can put it in a better spot, and I know he'd like to catch a couple of those.
What did you think about how you played personally? That's one of the, I can't remember the last time your completion percentage was below 50%. Did you feel like you weren't quite where you needed to be, or what went on?
Well, I don't like making excuses at all, and I'm not going to. I missed some throws I should have hit, but when you watch the film, I don't think you can say it was a real bad game. It was just one of those games where I wasn't We weren't completing the balls we wanted to. We usually do. I missed a couple spots. We're on the, you know, not on the same page a couple times. I had a couple crazy throwaways. You know, it was just a game without a lot of rhythm offensively. So definitely one of those games I can play better. I fumbled the ball. We thankfully picked it up, and we fumbled again, but we picked that one up as well. But didn't throw any interceptions, which you like. You think, you know, a no turnover game, you got a good chance of winning. But when you complete less than 50% of your passes, and you're not creating those big chunk gains like we usually do, then obviously you got to play better.
We'll talk about that fumble play in our inside the helmet discussion. I'm curious to know what you think of Marshall Newhouse as a ball carrier, but. Before we get to that, I did want to ask you about Randall Cobb. You said after the game that you did miss Greg Jennings. I think we all thought you would, even though you obviously have a lot of talent on that side of the ball. Did he kind of step in, though, right into Greg's role? I it's kind of hard to tell for us. We don't know what the game plan is, but he played a fair amount of snaps. I think he caught every ball that you threw his direction. What did you think of that?
Yeah, I think Randall's got a real bright future here as not only a kick return guy, but a guy who can really work in the slot and outside as well. So I'm proud of him. I think he did a nice job. I think he ran his routes very crisp. He has best offensive game for us in his young career. And, it wasn't any plays like he had against the Saints, but he was just doing the little things right every time and making sure his routes were crisp and he was running at the proper depth and the timing was good. So. Got to give Randall a lot of credit for his preparation. He's a guy who really cares about it, and he shows you by his preparation. He puts in the time. He knows what he's doing. He picks my brain to make sure we're on the same page all the time and all the little things that you really appreciate from a young player. And like I said, I think his future is really bright here.
We saw him throw a reverse pass in New York. They unveiled the Wildcat formation in Kansas City. Not very often that you're on the sideline for an offensive play. What was your view of that, and what do you think of that as a wrinkle? I should be clear that offensive coordinator Joe Philbin said that was one of the reasons why they did it was not to be tricky, but because they were looking for other ways to run the ball with only two running backs available.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about it.
That's it? That's all you got?
Yeah, that's it.
What if it was one of those plays like we saw Russell Wilson or Andrew Luck have? I know it's the NFL, not college, but would you be willing to go out and maybe catch a pass from him at some point, or are you not crazy about
that? I've done that one time, scout team 2006, I believe. We had an awesome play where I pitched it to the back and ran down the sidelines and caught a ball for about 40 yards. That was when I was a backup. I get paid to throw the football. And I like to be on the field in order to do that.
Fair enough. You mentioned some crazy throwaways. Take us through how a ball ends up 15 rows deep in the stands when you throw it there, I assume so, on purpose when you're throwing it away.
If you're talking about the one in the red zone, I was definitely throwing it away. Roll out to the right, and I was going to throw it away, but... at first, but the DB had jumped kind of in my face. I was able to hold on to that, and then I saw Tomba coming and just ducked under that. And it's one of those things where you duck and you kind of brace and your head goes down, and the next person that grabbed you, I don't know if it was friendly grab or got trying to hold me up, but it was TJ trying to hold me up. So as he like kind of pulled me up, I was trying to say, get off me, because I was trying to throw it away. I know when I was outside the pocket. And it looks like a really awkward play, but it did the trick. I threw it away, didn't take a sack, and lived to get another down there.
Now, you don't get fined for that ball, right? You don't have to pay for that one?
That's no, I don't know about the one later in the game, though.
Now, according to your buddy Clay Matthews, who did it in Minnesota, he was, in fact, fined by the league for that. And then he had to pay the guy that caught the ball to get the ball back, because it was his first touchdown. We're going to talk about that play specifically later, but why are you throwing that ball in the stands? Is that
the second one?
Yeah, is that emotion that you're...
I kind of wanted to, I told myself before the game, if I run one in, I kind of want to give it to a fan. I was on the bus coming over, I said, if I run one in today, I should give it to a fan. That was kind of my thought. So I ran one in. We're losing at that point, so you're not like in a jovial mood. And I turned to the fans. There were a couple Packer fans in the front row going crazy, and I gave them a little Nebraska triple option Tommy Frazier pitch, and turned around. And when I turned around and looked back, I think maybe they took their eyes off me for a second, and it kind of caromed over to the right, and somebody who I wasn't going for, I think, got it. But I don't know if a 6-yard Tommy Frazier option pitch is findable. If it is, hey, you know what, I'll take it. But I don't think it was the James Jones throw it 80 rows in the stands. It was just the, hey, I'm trying to get this to the fan, and I don't really feel like running all the way over there and walking to him. I just gave him a little, like I said, a little Frazier pitch.
Did Driver do something with the touchdown pass, too? Did he throw it in the stands?
I think he handed it in the stands.
Okay.
So I don't know how clear the rule is about a James Jones throw like in Atlanta, which was my 100th ball that I wanted, or the 40th touchdown that I kind of wanted as well that I think Donald gave to a fan, and my little, you know, option pitch in the stands. I don't know where the line is drawn at.
Did you get the 100th touchdown back?
No.
Did you get the 40th touchdown back?
No.
Have you talked to your two wide receivers about your desire to keep significant touchdowns?
I need a red baddie to run down there and grab that one for me.
Well, when we come back, we will go inside the helmet. We will look ahead to the Bears on Christmas night, and we will do your Ask Aaron questions. You are listening to the Aaron Rodgers Show. Back with you on the Aaron Rodgers Show, Tuesdays with Aaron, Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Time to go inside the helmet. From Sunday's 19-14 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs, the Packers' first loss in 364 calendar days. Let's look back at that fumble play, first of all. What happened on that play, maybe in terms of why they were able to get to you, and then what do you think of Marshall Newhouse when he picks up the ball and runs? Are you laying on the ground watching that transpire? Or what was your perspective from the start of the play to the end of the play?
Yeah, we had one of our base calls on, and I was looking out, I think it was JerMichael, looking at JerMichael on the slant first. He was almost trying to throw it in there to him, but yeah, he was kind of covered pretty good. Came back, and Crabtree was open for a split second, but the backside safety was kind of squeezing him. I came back to the left, and as my eyes started coming left, the end to my right had kind of taken inside rush lane, was going to get to me, so I kind of jumped back, and as I jumped back, they got rocked and lost the ball, which is disappointing and embarrassing. But as Tomba was over me, I couldn't really get up. I was trying to reach for the ball, and it was way out of my reach, and I saw Marshall pick it up, and my immediate thought, I swear to God, was I thought about Tony Moll against the Jaguars.
I remember that.
When he picked the ball up and got absolutely rocked. I mean, one of the biggest hits I've ever been a part of or seen. I still say the biggest hit was Amon Green 2005 on a 92 blast when he met Derek Brooks in the hole, and that was when Derek was at the top of his game and kind of ran him over. That was one of the biggest collisions I've ever seen. But this one was right up there with that. When Tony Moll was running and got absolutely creamed by, I can't remember what linebacker it was for Jacksonville, but it was quite a hit. But anyway, back to the play, I saw Marshall pick it up and was a little bit impressed right away. He stuck that arm out. It was a good stiff arm. But there's always that second guy lurking that got him. And Tomba is still kind of on top of me, so I can't really move to get up. And thankfully, TJ had hustled over there and picked the ball up and didn't try and stiff arm anybody.
His ball security was not ideal there. Did the offensive linemen, when you guys are doing ball security, they're just in the line trying to knock it out.
They'd have their own drills that they work on.
Is that the one where they dive?
The slide and scoop and secure, I think it's something like that, get in the fetal position. Marshall, he was thinking about getting that first down. And for a second, I thought he might get a couple yards. But you know, it's a disappointing play all around and frustrating to be a part of, and took us out of a good field goal range there.
The second play I wanted to ask you about was the 4th and 8 play where you guys decide to go for it.
Okay, why do we got to do 2 negative plays here?
Well, because you lost.
So? We should do 1 and 1, don't we?
Well, we're going to do this.
4th and 8, yeah. Had JerMichael open. Had a hard rush off the right side. I don't know whether he hit my arm or the ball or maybe nothing at all, but the ball didn't come out anywhere close to how I wanted it to. And, I was lucky Jermak got his hands on it, so it wasn't intercepted.
He almost actually came up with that. He almost
caught it. Crazy enough, he did, yeah.
It was an unbelievable play. And then let's talk about the touchdown run, what you saw there and how it ended up being a touchdown run, because usually you're looking to throw the ball, not run it.
Oh, definitely looking to throw the ball when I got out of the pocket. It was just one of our red zone concepts, and they were playing double coverage on both the inside guys, rushing three or four, dropping seven. I think they rushed four, they dropped seven. But I looked to the left first, covered. Looked at Jermichael on the right, covered. And felt somebody kind of falling on my leg, so my natural instinct was to move to the right. As I moved to the right, I felt like I had some open space. And that's when I get outside the pocket and was looking to move a guy with my eyes or a pump fake and throw a touchdown. A lot of times as you approach the line of scrimmage, you're usually going to get some sort of resistance from one of those cover guys in the end zone coming at you. Nobody did, so I realized I could even pump fake past the line of scrimmage and was probably going to be able to walk it in for a touchdown. And got close to the goal line, made a quick little jump right there at the end zone, so I'd avoided any type of hit and got in the end zone. And was happy we scored. Our goal starting the drive was to get a touchdown before the two-minute warning, knowing that would be an extra timeout for our defense. But I was looking to put a little pitch in the end zone into the stands for a fan.
What have you retired the belt?
The belt?
I haven't been keeping track, but I thought it was only when you ran it in, and then I think you've only done one this season.
Yeah, I have. The other two... the one was, I think, a legitimate belt opportunity. Dawkins kind of hit me late in the end zone, and it was a decent touchdown run, showed a little bit of athletic ability. The second one wasn't even ruled a touchdown immediately, so that's not belt-worthy. And then when you're losing 19-7, you run it in late in the fourth, that's not belt-worthy.
There are others who think sacks
well,
like is.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. No, I just haven't really done it.
You had talked about maybe eliminating it and coming up with something different. Have you come up with something different for, say, a touchdown with a touchdown pass or anything like that?
No, not really.
No? Okay. You had another long run earlier in the game, and it looked like you contemplated not sliding at one juncture.
Oh, for sure. I definitely did. Very perceptive of you there.
What changed your mind?
The lurking defenders closing quickly.
Take us through that play. That would give us two positive and two negative.
Yeah, two man on the play, so they're playing two high safeties, man underneath, which generally means nobody's assigned to myself. So if I can break contain, I have a good chance of getting a substantial amount of yardage. As I moved up in the pocket with nobody open, I made a cut, which looked semi-athletic, I think, and was able to get up the field, avoid another shoestring tackle. And for a split second, I was thinking this could be about a 30 or 40-yard gain. But then in the back of my mind, I'm thinking my calves sometimes cramp when I get a run over 25 yards. And it's kind of a joke between Graham and Matt and I. But I got in the open a little bit and was honestly contemplating trying to make a move on the safety, knowing, okay, I passed up probably five or six guys at least. There's probably three guys who are not close to the play, not going to be associated with the play. I got maybe one or two guys to beat here to have a big time, a long run. And then a better judgment kicked in very quickly, and I got down.
How did you come out of the game physically? You mentioned Holly's hit on you on the fumble. There were a couple other times where you got hit pretty good. How do you feel physically?
Yeah, I feel good. I feel good. For week 16, there's going to be a number of bumps and bruises and things that you're dealing with. It's just a matter of managing them and understanding kind of what works best for your body with your sleep schedule and if you're getting massages or you're a hot tub guy or a cold tub guy, and just making sure you stick to the routine that works best for you. I'm feeling good. It's Tuesday. There's different things that hurt on you. I woke up this morning. I got a bruise I didn't know was there on my side, from the game. So my shoulders, I took a shot on the sack there in the fourth quarter, but those are feeling good today. So it's just a matter of feeling better by Wednesday.
Let's look ahead to the Bears then. You've obviously started your preparation for them. They are very different from the Chiefs in that they're a common opponent that you've seen a heck of a lot. What do you see from them now versus when you saw them in Week 3?
Well, I think they're playing similar to when they started the season. I think the biggest difference is that their offense has just turned the ball over more now, so it's putting them in a little bit more compromising situations. They give up 38 points last week, but it's a little bit skewed because two of them were pick sixes. They had a couple more turnovers, which gave them a short field. So I still think they're one of the top defenses in the league. They have as good a corner tandem, I think, as you're going to see as far as really understanding a scheme and being able to cover guys within that scheme as well as you possibly can with Charles and Tim. Excellent players. Two of the top inside backers in the league, obviously with Brian and Lance, who play every play. Julius Peppers and Israel Adonijé are two of the top ends. Peppers, has been doing it for a long, long time. They got some guys inside who've been playing really well. Lovie Smith always has those guys prepared, and Rod Marinelli, their defensive coordinator, have a lot of respect for both of those men and the way that they approach their job and coach. It's a fun opponent to play because there's a strong competitive fire on both sides and a strong desire to beat the opponent. So I don't think there's any hatred or strong dirty play that you can expect, but there's a strong competitive nature on both sides that's gonna dominate the game.
You have kind of a one-on-one competitive nature with Brian Urlacher. We've talked about that before. You've lamented the fact how many times he's gotten you. He got you again in Week 3. What
You're
is that?
You're just being real negative today.
I am. That's me. Negative Nelly. What is your kind of working relationship like? Are you guys buddies? Do you kind of needle each other during the course of the game? What's that dynamic like?
Well, I have a lot of respect for him. I think he plays the game at a high level when he plays it the right way, with a lot of respect for the game, the integrity of the game, and the way he conducts himself. He's a great competitor. He loves to get shots on guys when he gets the opportunity. He's not going to shy away. There's not going to be any big brother or anything when he has a shot to take a clean one on me. But I just think there's a respect level between the two of us that we appreciate the way the other plays and the approach that they take. It's a semi chess match between the two of us, and we've played them a number of times. I think this is my ninth start against them as a starter, and looking forward to it again. Enjoy the TV timeout banter and also the opportunity to try and to try and beat those guys and win the mental and the physical game against them.
Have you guys ever talked about the NFC Championship game play? I mean, that's not one that you necessarily can brag about.
I can't believe how negative you're being today.
You can't brag about it, but neither can he. Have you guys ever talked about that?
Nah, not really.
You're lying.
I haven't.
You've never talked about it. He's never said anything about you getting him and how big of a play that was to make that tackle.
I think we might have talked during the game last year and briefly. Like, hey, thanks for letting me take you down or something, but no, not since then.
On a much more serious note, did you see the play that Johnny Knox got hurt on?
I did, and I had the privilege of playing with Johnny in the Pro Bowl a couple of years ago, and Johnny's a great guy, and that was, that was tough to watch. I'm hopeful that it's not career-threatening because that looked pretty bad.
When you see plays like that happen, is it sobering to know how much you guys, look, you're well paid, you get all the accolades and the popularity, but there is some genuine physical risk to this game. I mean, whether it's Nick Collins, and we don't know if he's going to play again, thankfully he can live a normal life with his kids and his wife if he can't play, or seeing that happen to Knox. I mean, does that stuff kind of... First of all, do you have to keep it in one place in your mind so you can play the game the way you need to? And when you see things like that happen, what goes through your mind?
I don't think you ever think about that when you're playing. That's just something that, unfortunately, is a part of the game from time to time. Injuries are a part of the game. You hate to see them to anybody. But, those scary injuries. I was reminded this week in Kansas City, got to see Tony Palmer. And Tony was a... offensive lineman for us, probably the most well-liked guy in the locker room during his time in Green Bay. and he broke his neck against the Giants. Now he's able to function now, and he has some, still some lingering issues with that. But here's a guy who loved to play football and played it real well. I mean, he was playing great in the preseason that year for us, 2007, and third game of the year, I believe, we go down there, and he can't move his neck. He has to have some issues and complications. Can't play football ever again. So it's stuff like that that really, I think, brings into perspective the opportunity we have, but also how fleeting our careers can be, and to just try and enjoy it as much as you can, and pray something like that doesn't happen.
He's a phenomenal guy. Him and Jarrett Bush and Charlie Pepper all kind of came in together. They were all those guys that were claimed at the end of camp. He may be one of the funniest guys I've ever talked to, if you got the opportunity. You're smiling. That was one of his...
That
many...
infectious laugh. I mean, you can't help but just be drawn into him. He's got a big personality. He's a great guy.
Before we get to Ask Aaron, how do you feel about playing on Christmas night?
I didn't realize until a couple of days ago that we're the only, I guess yesterday, we're the only game on Christmas. Everybody else is playing either Christmas Eve or the Monday night game. Lucky. It's fun to be the only game on. And nice with the schedule that Mike's given us this week is great as well. But, it'd be tough to travel on Christmas. We're fortunate enough to be home for Christmas, so that's a positive.
You live here. Your parents are out west. Your brothers are scattered about. What do you do for Christmas when you're here?
You bring them to you.
They're all coming in?
Yes, most of them are.
Okay. Well, we'll get to Ask Aaron. You know, it's funny. You guys play on Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. You're the only team in league history to hit all three of those holidays.
We did that in 2005.
I don't think so. Far be it for me to disagree with you on this show, though, so you must
be
right.
I thought I was wrong once, but I made a mistake.
Here is Ask Aaron for this week. The first question comes from Brian, and if you want to get in on the Ask Aaron festivities, you can use the hashtag on Twitter, Ask Aaron. Brian asks, have you ever ridden in the Chico Wildflower Century Ride? If so, what part of the course was the hardest for you?
I believe my dad has, but no.
That's a big, like, a charity bike ride?
I don't know. Chico? I just remember seeing Dad in an old tank top that said something, I think Chico Wildflower or something, Century something.
Daniel has another kind of quirky off-the-field question. He says, I heard a rumor that you play disc golf.
True.
That is true.
Very true.
If true, how often do you play, and do you normally tee off with a forehand or backhand throw?
Definitely. I think I'm all majority backhand. Occasionally I have to use the forehand or the tomahawk, which also can be appropriate when going over trees. But enjoy, there's a great course down in Balboa Park in San Diego. There's a couple up north of Chico that are fun to play. Actually, I've played one around here before as well.
And I shouldn't call it frisbee golf. It's disc golf. That's the proper term.
Well, frolf, if you will.
Okay, Costanza. How do you end up getting into that? Is that a Cal thing?
Yeah, it's probably a hippie thing. Yeah.
Okay. CJ, there's another. Well, we're all off the field sporting questions. CJ wants to know if you can dunk, and he says, "Go Bears." He goes to Cal.
Yes, I can. I think I still can.
When was the last time you did?
Shoot. I haven't got a chance to play a lot of basketball, but I've had two really awesome dunks in my career in a competitive setting. One, I was playing, three really good friends went to Santa Clara and played the Division I basketball there, and I used to go down there in the off seasons, and we'd play some pickup games, and I had a dunk on a fast break on a really in a really competitive game with some of those guys. It was pretty awesome. And then one time I was playing, this was like in Chico, and I was in junior college. It was the only time I ever dunked on anybody, and we were playing this 3-on-3 game with a couple buddies, and I took this guy hole and dunked on him, and that was one of the highlights of my sporting career. And I have witnesses, so it's right up there with the hole in one in the Super Bowl.
Are you not? You can't? Can you? Does your contract say you can't play basketball?
it strongly advises you to not get hurt off the field.
There's a financial disincentive if you do something foolish like that, or
yes,
really. So do you miss playing basketball? Because I know your friend was here last week. You guys,
I do.
I know you like the game.
I love basketball, but you know, I'll get into a couple over 35 or 40 leagues when I'm done playing.
Fair enough. Chip wonders, what would Jack Handy's philosophy be about Sunday's loss?
That's a good question.
Now people need to understand that you're a fan of those deep thoughts on Saturday Night Live, which I assume you were. It was past your bedtime at the team hotel. Did you get to watch Saturday Night Live? Or they had a pretty good skit on Tim Tebow that was pretty funny. You might want to check out if you missed it.
I've seen it.
Jack Handy, nothing.
I don't have anything that really comes to mind that's appropriate. You know, in typical Jack Handy fashion. You know, one of my favorite ones is the one where the kids used to play with Uncle Caveman all the time. And then one time Uncle Caveman eats one of them, and then they realize Uncle Caveman was a bear. That was a good one.
Oh, boy. That's not bad. The last two, one from Mark. You seem like a very intelligent guy and have a knack for numbers and stats, so let's talk about the Wunderlic. Are you willing to share your score on the Wunderlic? I think it's public record. I think there's been a writer who's pointed that out.
It's over 30.
It's a 50-question test. What do you get, 12 minutes to take it?
Yeah.
Is that right?
My favorite story from it is, I'll just say my favorite story. There was 50 questions. A lot of these places, and I do it probably even more now, is they prep you for the test. Some of these places where you train before the draft, they give you like a pretest or whatever. We never took any pretest at our at the Alameda Naval Base where I trained with PEPA Sports. Anyway.
Nice plug.
Yeah, thank you. Wunderlic. 50 questions, 12 minutes, go. So my strategy was I'm going to go through and try and answer all the ones that I know quickly, and at the end I'll fill any. I'm not going to waste any time on ones I'm a little stumped by at first.
Okay.
When they said 1 minute left, there's a gentleman who's not in the league anymore who turned to me and was could not believe there was only 1 minute left. He 1 minute? That's it? And I glanced over at his paper, and I think he'd completed about four or five questions.
That's
now,
not going to go well.
Yeah. I don't think he scored very high, needless to say. But yeah, I got over 30, I think.
Do you think there's a correspondence between that test and... I mean, you're right. Everyone talks about it like a measurable, like your 40 time or your hand size or whatever else. Do you think it corresponds in any way to your ability to understand an offense or read defenses?
I think that the majority of the things that go on at the combine, other than the interviews, have very little to zero corresponding things to stuff you're going to need to do in the NFL. How many times is the lineman going to run 40 yards in a 40-yard sprint? Never. How important is it that you do the Cybex test? To me, is absolutely ridiculous. They, you know, just the whole thing is set up for you to fail, and I think it's kind of ridiculous. Our group, I mean, you take this, you do the Cybex test, which burns your legs out on the first thing you do. Then
what can you explain?
It's testing the strength in your legs. Then you go into, then the next morning you're woken up at 5, which is 3 on your body clocks for us West Coast guys, to do a drug test. And then you're just going all day long. The last day you warm up for the 40, and then you sit down for an hour. And then you got to warm up on your own real quick and then run a 40. I mean, that has, that's just setting up to fail. You throw footballs there, which I didn't throw, but you throw brand new footballs, which are slick and not worked in. Why would you not want to present guys in an environment that's conducive to them being successful? To me, it doesn't make any sense. You send a guy off all day to do MRIs and leave him all alone. He just sits around all day, and the next day you expect them to do athletic events and test really well. It doesn't make any sense.
So we found your post-NFL career calling. You can rent. completely restructure the scouting combine.
I'm not going to do anything with football when I'm done.
The last question comes from Kelly. She heard that your 40th and 100th touchdown passes went into the stand. She wants to know, how many game balls do you actually still have, and what do you do with a garage full of game balls?
I need some ideas for that. I've gotten a bunch this year, and I'm not sure which ones to display. I don't really have a whole lot of room to display them. Some of them are very meaningful. Some maybe not as much, but, you know, I think I might give them away at some point, some of them. But there's a few that are really meaningful to me.
So the ones that you don't necessarily want to keep, we need to figure out a way to...
Well, there's some that I got when I wasn't playing. You know, like the whole offense, we had 500 yards of offense in 2006. We had 200 yards of rushing, so everybody in the room got a, you know.
And you don't know what to do with the ones that are meaningful either? You don't?
No, I do. I
those you've gotten in your hutch?
Yeah, they're somewhere.
Well, we will be back next week to talk about the Packers-Bears game. I will try not to be quite as negative as I was today. You could have an impact on that, you know, with a victorious outcome. Why are you giving me a dirty look?
Attitude. There's a great quote about attitude that you need to look up.
What is it?
I don't have it, but it talks about how the attitude is the one thing that you can determine every day when you wake up.
I thought
so. You woke up this morning and you were determined to not have a good attitude. So
I don't think that's
don't blame
true
it
at
on
all.
Me. Don't blame it on the Packers because we lost.
I asked some
don't
negative
questions.
Don't blame
it on, you know, your family. You woke up this morning and you chose to be in a bad mood.
Bad mood.
Yep.
I'm in a great mood.
Now the only thing you're doing right today is you're wearing a Cal sweatshirt.
Well, I appreciate you soldiering on throughout the show despite my bad attitude. That was kind of you.
Tough.
We will do it again next week. You have been listening to the Aaron Rodgers Show.